Thank you. Hello, I am Jean Thoré. I work for EDF. I'll present you a joint work with several French institutes, as INRIA, Météo France, and MinParisTech. I'll talk to you about forecasting solar radiation with online ensemble learning tools. The outline of this presentation is rather simple. First, I'll talk about ensemble of forecasts for solar radiations, and then I'll talk more deeply about the online ensemble learning. I will only talk about scalar forecasting because of a patent application running now. So let's give a first look at the data. We are trying to forecast GHI, and for two typical days, we can compare the forecasts with verification maps based on satellite data. This forecast is said to be typical because the performance of the forecast are typical for these days in particular. And what we see here basically is that the forecast have a very much coarser resolution than the verification maps. And also maybe one forecast is not enough. Why wouldn't we use multiple forecasts and try to make the best use of them? For our forecast horizon, from several hours to a few days, we use numerical weather predictions, and a lot of them, that is to say an ensemble of forecasts based on different atmospheric models, parameterization, or perturbations. This is my field of research, that is to say I study ensemble forecasting with statistics and online learning tools with an application on solar forecasting. Solar radiation data has a very high variability. It means that from one time step to another, it can change a lot, and a low predictability, which means that it's hard to quantify the changes. That's why ensemble of forecasts are designed in order to catch the uncertainty of the observation. That's what you can see here with the spread of the basic ensemble, with the basic ensemble in blue, and you can compare it to the observation for several days. We'll focus on one given experiment. The goal of this experiment is to estimate as better as possible the average GHI between 6 and 12, which in France means in the morning until the noon peak. And we will work on the high resolution grid of our verification data for a forecast horizon quite short of 12 hours, but with possible extensions. Our verification data are real-time satellite-derived estimation with a resolution of around 10 kilometers, averaged from the database HelioClim 3. For our forecast, we'll use TIGI ensembles with a coarser resolution of around 25 kilometers that are free and available online with a delay. And as you can see, we use 158 members based on several meteorological center ensembles from China, European Union, UK, Korea, Brazil, and France. And what we intend to do is to combine all of these forecasts. Let's give a first look at the data from TIGI without any processing. And if we look at the annual average of the ensemble mean of each of these centers, we see that the meteorological centers disagree on the long, in fact, in the long run, but also from day to day forecast. And this difference can be rather large. We can check the round diagrams in order to see if the TIGI ensembles capture correctly the uncertainty of the observations. And we see that without calibration, all of these ensembles are underdispersed, and especially the CPTech ensemble, which has a very low spread. Now, in terms of performance, here is plot the monthly scores of the ensembles means from TIGI. This is the same colors, of course, between the two plots, so that you can see that UKMO and KMA give the best forecast all along the year. And the RMSE is computed by comparison to the verification map of real-time satellite-derived estimations. These forecasts are compared with the ECMWF deterministic forecast. but also with our forecast. And how did we build it? The principle is to create a linear combination of the members, and this linear combination is supposed to have the best performance than any individual members, any of the 158 members. We note X for the members and U for the weights that we give them. The members are sorted in each TG ensemble in order to be able to identify them. And the method is applied at each grid point on the high resolution grid in an independent manner. That is to say, the weights depend both in time and space. For example, if you are at T minus one and you try to forecast the observation y of t, you have already received some forecast. You have a given way to compute the weights. Then you can produce your combination, and you wait for the observation to be delivered. And at the next step, here it goes on. How do we compute the weights? This is the main part of this talk, I think. We use an online regularized regression technique. This has two main components. First, you have to choose a given loss. Here we choose the square loss, which is a very basic technique. And a regularization term, here is the rich term. And the weight vector is chosen as the minimizer of a given cost function based on the past losses. So we really intend to create the best combination possible, and we do not weight each member based on its individual performance. You can give some focus on recent data by using some discount factors, so that finally you have, for example, two parameters, lambda for the regularization term and gamma for the discount factors. But in practice, there is only a low sensitivity around these optimal parameters. The second main important point is the theoretical guarantee of our technique, which comes under essentially no assumptions. If you compare the loss given our forecast, defined by U of T, as shown just before, and if you compare this performance in terms of RMSE here to the best combination with constant weights, you see that the difference in performance tends to zero with increasing T and can even be negative. That is to say, our competitor, the best combination with constant weights, is in fact more skillful than the ensemble mean and each individual member, and we are trying to beat him. This theoretical guarantee is a guarantee of robustness because this bound holds for any time series. How does our aggregated forecast look like? Because we have done some localized corrections, we see that we have improved the resolution for our aggregated forecast. Here we compare our data for a given day, and it is called typical because the performance of the best member and the aggregated forecast for this day is the same as their average performance. And we see that we have an improved resolution, and which is quite interesting when we compare it to the verification maps. In the long run, we correct the local biases. Then we can get some fine spatial structures if we give a look at the annual average of the forecast. The performance map is an easy way to represent where it is where the aggregation brings improvement and where it is easy or not to forecast. Here it is shown for the RMSE and the relative RMSE, so that we have a comparison with the average value of the observations. Because our forecasts have a coarse resolution, we see that the regions of complex terrains are the most difficult to forecast. And we also see a north-south gradient on the relative RMC map. Here, I've been talking for only one given lead time, but in fact, people are interested in many lead times. So how can we choose the weights, and how should they depend on the lead time? Of course, first I will talk about what's on the slide. For this example, we have hourly forecast that depend on the member, the hour of our given day, and the lead time. And we try to estimate the observation a few days later. The first way to do so is to define the weights per hour and per lead time only based on the observation for the given lead time and for the given hour. Another way to do so is to lag the weights and to define the weights per hour, but only based on the forecast for the shortest lead time. And then the forecast that you have been building for D plus one, you can use it also several days later. And this is what we show here. The weights are computed for the next forecast for 12 of UTC. And you see that you keep the weights for 18 of UTC, but also the next day, and the weights are consistent for longer lead times. As a conclusion, I've shown here that we study ensemble forecasting of solar radiation, and we go from low resolution forecast to high resolution observations. And our techniques bring some theoretical guarantee. Our method is robust and simple and compatible with operational forecasts. I see that I still have a few minutes, so maybe I have additional slides that we can go through. Just have to say that here are some references on model combination and what are the theoretical bounds that you can get depending on your update rule of the weights. And if we go through some more technical details about the theoretical guarantee, I said before that there are essentially no guarantee, and this is true because the only two assumptions on there are no sorry assumptions. The two assumptions are basically only that our losses are bounded, which is quite true for solar forecast because we are trying to forecast a bounded quantity. And the other thing is that our competitor should have a bounded two norm, but it is quite a ridiculous assumption. In order to be able to quantify what is the gain that can be brought by this technique, usually we compute the performance of the oracle. The oracle is the best combination with constant weights. But for this example, for example, we have less than 400 time steps, but more than 150 members, so that we have a general problem of overfitting, so that we can build the oracle on selected orthogonalized members with a PCA technique. And it will give you an idea of how much you can improve your forecast based on the oracle performance. What are the alternatives? There are many options in this technique, and in fact, I've been through only one given method. For example, you can normalize all of your data with clear sky data, in fact, you'll pre-process your time series. Maybe you should not use all of your members because 158 is would be some redundant information, and maybe choose only a few members in each sub-ensemble. You can also do a two-step aggregation, first within each sub-ensemble and second with the aggregated forecast. How do you identify your member is another question. Should you really sort them per rank and in each ensemble or not? And a key thing is that you can introduce your own members and your own expertise with, for example, lagged ensemble or members created from analogs, or you can use forecasts from near grid points. And I'll finish here, thank you.
Thank you very much for the, even time for the details you had. Do we have questions? God. Well, let's start this time in the back. I come to you.
Oops. So, Ziad and Boalek, German Weather Service. Thank you for your talk. Very nice talk. So, if I get it right, you are combining five ensemble system, and you are back to a deterministic forecast.
Yes.
So your loss function is a quadratic loss function. Is there no interest for probabilistic forecast from your customers?
Of course there is, and this is the point of the patent application, but I don't have the right to talk about it today.
Okay, well, next question on this side. Was someone more?
Gerald van der Gren, Meteor Group. You were saying that you keep the weight constant per lead time?
Consistent.
Consistent, yeah. Do you see any spatial inconsistencies because you compute the weights per grid point? Do you understand what I mean?
You mean spatial inconsistencies?
Spatial inconsistencies. If you look at maps.
No. For each maps of our forecast, there is always a consistency, a spatial consistency, as you can see here. Is it your question?
Yeah, but do you see situations where you see inconsistencies?
No, we don't, but I think that this is mainly due to the fact that all of our forecast has a coarse spatial resolution.
So you were saying that you're using the linear regression to find the parameters of each model. I was wondering what size of the training data set you have and how you validate the parameters.
In fact, there is no training data set. The weights are learned continuously, and you don't need any training data set.
So once the new data comes in, you it's automatically added.
Yes. Okay. At first, you can begin by the ensemble mean for your weights,
mm-hmm.
and for example, 10 time steps, but much longer is not needed.
Okay. Thanks.
Okay. There's a question. I know there are many on the right-hand side, and we have a few minutes left, but I turn to the left side, otherwise I'm not fair.
Paul Stackhouse from NASA Langley. I was just curious on your verification map. Where did you get the verification map, and how do you handle uncertainties in the verification?
You can turn back and ask Philippe Blanc, because he's actually the responsible for this data.
Of course, your verification is based on satellites, so the satellite have its own error in space and in time. So the idea is, okay, the Helioclimb database is the truth, but it's not the case. But we can see that, okay, the numerical weather prediction that has been used has clearly low and in space and in time resolution. So and we are pretty sure that satellite data has this ability to retrieve this temporal and spatial variability. So this is the idea. And then I think the next step would be to integrate in-situ measurements to correct also the satellite data.
Yes, of course. And in fact, in our loss function, we can add terms that include the uncertainty and the observations.
Well, more questions around here somewhere.
You know, when ECMWF look at how they build ensembles, and I know TIGI has more modeling centers than the ones you chose. Their technique is to basically understand how it introduces increased errors by taking, if you take the full set rather than a subset. So I'm just curious on your selection of those five. Was that because for those five countries, they actually have better performance. In other words, they're in a sense using the ECMWF technique of not introducing errors, because as you get to introduce more error in your regression, you end up not necessarily representing the best. Now, as ECMWF's approach, it's interesting when you look at how they use ensembles. Second point is the user community is a risk-based decision-making process. So I'm curious why you haven't factored in where the uncertainties are, because the value of ensembles is actually to demonstrate the uncertainties that are in these forecast models, which actually conveys to the user how they discount the risk themselves. So I'm just curious why you didn't use more of a probabilistic approach rather than deterministic.
For your first question, it's quite simple. Based on our goal, only these six meteorological centers provided the forecast, so we were limited by the database availability. And for a probabilistic forecast, as I said before, we have currently work on it, but I cannot talk about it, and you are completely right. This is the most interesting thing.
Okay. One more? If not from the audience, then from my side. What happens if you leave one of those out?
It's a very good question. In fact, in the article, we talk a bit about it. You can take one sub-ensemble out, and in fact, it won't change much the results. We found that it would change the result by less than 1%, even if you take out the more skillful ensemble. But because we already have so many members, the information somewhere is there. And because of the redundancy of the ensembles, you don't lose much by taking one out.
I'd really like to see if with one of those, which of those, two of those, and so on. Because it's really an issue at the end of price you're going into here. So tomorrow it's a Tigger, but later on in operations it will be costly, probably. Yeah, well, but very interesting. I mean, you have seen lots of questions. That is a special part of the applause at the end is for you. But not now. We go to the next speaker.
Thank you.